The House Transportation and Regional Governance Policy Committee will come to order. We are. There is a quorum. And may I have a motion to approve the minutes from the March 8th meeting, Representative Carlson?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson moves the approval of the minutes from the March 8th meeting. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion prevails, and the minutes of the meeting, March 8th, 2017, are approved. Representative Quam was, we got two bills today. Representative Quam, House File 678. Welcome to the committee, Representative Quam. I will move that Representative Quam's bill, House File 678, be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. Representative Quam, I see you also have an amendment labeled A1. I will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that you wish. Those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Quam, please present us your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I might have got a few testifiers. If they can make their way here and start occupying chairs, they probably can more colorfully illuminate the desire and the intent of this bill. And so I will yield for brevity.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the committee. And if you could please, as you present your testimony, state your name and who you represent for the record, and then continue with your testimony. I don't have a list of your names, but please introduce yourself.
There'll be a total of five of us. We'll make it quick. My name is Roger Berge.
You've got plenty of time. There's two bills, so we should be okay.
I actually don't represent law enforcement. I don't have the credentials that the folks here do. I work at a tire store. I actually approached Senator Senjum about this bill regarding the law enforcement memorial plate. And Representative Quam have been gracious enough to help us move it forward. LEMA is an organization that provides so much. We see on the news the 35 volunteer men and women in their Class A dress uniforms standing watch at the memorial here on the Capitol grounds. What you don't see is the men and women who meet with the families of the fallen officers after the death. What you don't see is the person writing the checks to help with the immediate financial needs of the officers' families after an officer is killed in the line of duty. And what you don't see is the officers arranging for and accompanying family members to counseling, or the officers buying presents for the kids of the fallen officers. My first realization of the dangers of law enforcement came on May 17th of 1977. My father's partner in Olmsted County was shot and killed in the line of duty. My father has been, ironically, 50 years today has been in law enforcement, and he is working today in Olmsted County. So I've literally grown up around it. I rode home in the back of a squad car when I was a few days old, and I've been around one ever since, usually in the front seat. I like many people, support LEMA by sending them a check every year, but this is a way to offset some of their costs. LEMA is a volunteer organization. They don't take paychecks. These men and women travel around the state and provide not only support for the families of those who have fallen, but the officers in the department who are like family to them. This plate would offer a way to help fund the Law Enforcement Memorial Association. The $5 from each plate that would go to them after it is passed and brought in would help offset all of their costs. There are currently just over 10,200 current law enforcement officers in the state of Minnesota, and there are 16,500 approximately retired, an average of almost three cars per household, I can see a good financial support for a great organization. I really appreciate you having us here. In closing, I just want to say thank you for letting us be here and give my sincere gratitude to the men and women that are protecting us every single day and the ones who have made the ultimate sacrifice, the survivors who are here.
Thank you, Mr. Berge. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Officer Scott Rose.
Yes, thank you.
Correct.
I'm Scott Rose. I'm the sheriff with the Dodge County Sheriff's Office. We're located just west of Rochester in the southeastern part of the state. As many of you know, law enforcement has had a tough couple of years. In 2016, we had 142 line-of-duty deaths throughout this country. We've already had 26 line-of-duty deaths since the first of the year here in Minnesota. Nationwide, 26 line-of-duty deaths. Nationwide, we've also had nearly 1,500 officers killed in the line of duty during the past 10 years. That's an average of one officer killed every 60 hours. Not to mention the nearly 60,000 officers that are assaulted every year. In Minnesota, we have had 240 line-of-duty deaths recorded. Unfortunately, four of them have been in my county. The most recent Minnesota officer down was Investigator Steven Sandberg from the Aiken County Sheriff's Office on October 18th of 2015. Mm-hmm. With the constant barrage of the negative media and the anti-law enforcement rhetoric we face, law enforcement really needs support from our leadership at the Capitol. The Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association, who they do amazing work honoring the fallen and helping families left behind. They also need your help more than ever. We had the unfortunate opportunity to see the amazing work they do firsthand at our county's fourth line of duty death in September of 2013. The work they did to support our fallen captain's family, our sheriff's office, and its extended law enforcement family, it was critical in our being able to honor the fallen, support his family, support our extended law enforcement families, and help us work through the grieving process. It's an incredible organization. And their process of dealing with these families and dealing with these issues is, unfortunately, one we know firsthand with our county, and we know how important it was for our community. LEMA also helped us last month recognize a line-of-duty death in Dodge County from 1999 that was never formally recognized here in the state or nationally. So the impact they make on surviving families is absolutely amazing, and we've seen it firsthand in Dodge County. My son's godmother is the daughter of Reserve Officer William H. Freitag. He was killed in the line of duty back in 1961 in Rochester. Officer Freitag's death took a great toll on his family, and to this day, she's still unable to attend the state law enforcement memorial services, and it's been 50 years. This family is a perfect example of why the type of support system LEMA provides for fallen families in Minnesota is so vitally important. To continue to support the families of the men and women who paid the ultimate sacrifice to serve and protect. The services and programs, just to give you a brief rundown of some of the great programs and services that LEMA does provide. In addition to taking care of the law enforcement memorial out in front of the Capitol, they offer counseling for surviving family members, financial assistance for immediate needs of the family when needed. They assist the family with identifying and collecting state, federal, and local benefits. They work together with the National Financing Planning Association to help assist survivors in establishing monthly budgets, savings, investment plans for the kids. They conduct an ecumenical church service each year. They manage and conduct services on the National Law Enforcement Memorial Day at the State Monument. They manage a scholarship program for fallen officer survivors, and they conduct family survivor events throughout the year. It's just an amazing organization. Just a few great things that they do. In 2015, Playgolf Minnesota's specialty license plate was made available for sale. And my understanding is it supports junior golf and player development programs throughout the Minnesota Golf Association. I'm sure it's a great association and a great cause. My feeling is if we can have a license plate that supports this, we can certainly have one to support law enforcement. We have firemen's plates. We have ambulance service plates. We have veterans plates in Minnesota. But there are no plates to support the men and women in law enforcement. The Law Enforcement Memorial Association supports over 441 agencies in Minnesota, which includes over 10,000 men and women who risk their lives every day to keep our community safe. If there was ever an organization that I think is important to support, it'd be this one. To fully appreciate the heroes of the present, really, we must recognize our heroes of the past. And these plates will allow us as a community and a state to recognize these men and women who've paid the ultimate sacrifice. It helps us support Lima and the work that they do, and also provides a great opportunity for the public here to really publicly show their support for law enforcement and for these families. So on behalf of the law enforcement community, I thank you for your time and consideration on this proposal.
Thank you very much, Sheriff Rose. Appreciate your testimony. Next on the list, we have Ms. Michelle Patrick. And I believe you were in front of the committee last year.
Pardon?
I believe you were in front of the committee last year.
No.
2 years ago? No?
No.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and welcome to hear your testimony.
Good afternoon. I'm Michelle Patrick, and I'm a survivor. My husband was a Mendota Heights police officer, and he was killed in the line of duty on July 30th, 2014, at 12:20 p.m. That was when I had the unfortunate time to meet some of the Lima board. And I'm very grateful for their time and their effort that they put in. It was a very tough time in my life. I, too, looked up specialty plates that Minnesota has. When I saw that we have contribution plates for college, and specialty plate for licensed radio operators, I find it a little strange that I'm sitting here trying to convince you that we need to have a plate to honor the Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association, or LEMA. We need to support the officers. We need to remember those that have fallen. I really hope you'll pass this bill. I would love to show my support for Lima and as a thank you for what they have done for me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony and being here today. Dave Holmquist, Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I appreciate your time greatly. I feel privileged to be here. I'm Dave Holmquist. I'm a sheriff's deputy with Candidate County Sheriff's Office out of Wilmer, Minnesota, which is straight west of here. I'm the commander of the law enforcement, Lima Honor Guard. I feel very privileged and honored to be in this position. Our Honor Guard is made up of 30-plus law enforcement officers throughout the state of Minnesota who volunteer their time. They are made up of police officers from through numerous cities throughout the state, deputies throughout numerous counties, state troopers, DNR officers. We've actually had FBI agents and also Federal Reserve officers on the Honor Guard. Our Honor Guard is basically there to support what Lima does and carry out our mission, which is to provide help planning and preparing for funerals. Obviously, law enforcement funerals, as you've seen them, are not small events. Officers come from throughout the United States, and I've had a privilege of meeting people from New York, California, et cetera, come to law enforcement funerals, bear respect for our fellow brothers and sisters that are killed in the line of duty. It's an honor for us to be there to send them off the heroes, sending. We prepare and plan with the family whatever they wish. Their wishes is kind of our command kind of thing. So we prepare them for what it's going to be like, and then their wishes are our command, and we do so. And with that being said, when the time comes at the funeral, we help carry out the ceremonial honors that that we provide at those funerals, which include door guards, casket guards, urn guards, flag presentations, folding the flag, casket movements, the firing of the three volleys, and the playing of taps at the end. Again, everything, whatever the family wishes, that's what we do. If they don't want it, we don't want that. But we're here to support the family with whatever wish they have. Make sure you give that fallen officer the absolute respect and honor that they deserve for giving their life in the line of duty to protect our communities. Since being on the Honor Guard for the past 10 years, I've just seen, I first got on the Honor Guard because I saw the Honor Guard in action at a funeral at Sergeant Gerald Vick's funeral, St. Paul Police Officer killed in the line of duty. And I saw the excellence, the level, the professionalism they brought, and I said, I want to be part of that. Once I became part of the Honor Guard, I got to see what Lima itself does and what they are. And it's amazing to see an organization take a family that I've seen over the past 10 years, be there for a family at a funeral when they're in their worst times, and I stand there, and I watch the family crying, upset, and try to understand this tragedy that happened to them, try to explain to them in their mind of why we lost a fellow family member in the line of duty. And Lima be there to help carry them financially or, more importantly, support emotionally and also resources down the road to help that family through. Then I look what Lima does in the survivor events that they carry, whether it's a picnic, shopping with the cop, or whether it's Disney on Ice event, and I see that same survivor family maybe 6 months, 2 months, 10 years later at that event, and just having a good time laughing and enjoying it, and seeing those kids running around that were standing there crying at the casket, now running around enjoying life. And that's Lima giving, being at the worst time, yeah, giving them that opportunity and hope in life kind of down the road a little bit. So it's a, you need, Lima just provides that support and financially and, more importantly, emotionally and also resourceful to these survivors. And I include my family now when I go to events to bring them, so my family, my wife and children can see the great organization, because worst case scenario, it happened to be me any day, it could be out there. And my life's taken. I know that my family's going to be well taken care of by Lima. So I ask that take a look at the special license plate bill. In closing, I just want to say I remember when my father got his Vietnam veteran plates, he was really proud of them. Not because he was a vet and thought, okay, I get special. He was not like that at all. It was just an honor being kind of memorializing those fallen brothers that did not come back from war with him when he came back. And that's why I look at the Lima license plate as a chance to memorialize those officers who have died in the line of duty, 270-plus in the state of Minnesota. Just a chance to memorialize those officers by those license plate and a memory that we can carry around with us and see every day. We thank you for that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, officer. And one more testifier. Please identify yourself. And
okay, my name is Donna Wilkin.
Okay.
I'm the wife of Michael Wilkin, who died in the line of duty in 2009. And personally, Lima was fantastic, being there for me immediately after Mike died and supporting me and my family. But long term, they continue to support us through events. They need our support. I'm also currently the president of Minnesota Concerns of Police Survivors, and have talked to many survivors over the past 6 years in Minnesota. And one of the biggest concerns after the immediate shock is that their officer won't be forgotten. And Lima's helping to support that. And I think that the move to do the license plates will be a visual reminder when they're on the road, when people, they see the plates, how important their loss was and that it isn't being forgotten. So I would wholeheartedly support Lima's license plates, and I can't wait to get one. So thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Riker?
Yes, sir.
My name is are there any other testifiers with you? I think that's it. Okay.
My name is, first of all, thank you for taking the time to hear this. My name is Dustin Reichert. I'm a retired deputy sheriff from the Anoka County Sheriff's Office. 2003, I found myself staring down the barrel of a gun. And in a matter of 10 seconds, gunshots were fired, and I found that my entire life and career was changed. I was shot twice. And I remember laying on the ground thinking only of my son. He was 4 years old, and what's going to happen? I was settled on the fact that I was dying. Moved forward, obviously I didn't die, healed well, retired, and since then I've had lots of opportunities, unfortunate opportunities, to attend funerals for police officers, friends. I want to share with you guys that Lima has a lot of great programs. All I can do is share to you the side. We want perfection. Every one of us in this room have lost somebody somehow. And when we go to those funerals, we strive hard to balance budget and perfection. Police officers will take that extra step to protect their brothers and sisters of the badge. They want perfection, but they also want to be able to heal. That's where Lima steps in. Lima steps in to give that perfection, that support, and allows the officers and the family to move forward and do their grieving without having to worry about every one of those details. And that, regardless if it's Officer Scott Patrick, who was violently killed, Deputy Tony Fitzlaw from my own agency, who showed up early one day and told his other deputy to go home, I got you, and he died of a heart attack shortly after. And Lima was there at his funeral. Officer Jake Railing, Chief Jake Railing, had recently received a chief status, and unfortunately months later up in St. Francis, he passed of cancer that he was unaware of. And Lima was there doing some amazing things to make Jake's family, Tony's family, and every other family calm. So I ask that you pass this bill so that we can, number one, support Lima in the great things that they do, and number two, support the memory of every officer that's ever died in the line of duty in the state for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Anybody else in the audience? Seeing none. Any member questions? Representative Mason?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, a comment. I was on the Eagan City Council when we lost one of our officers, and it is an experience that I will never forget. The sheer number of uniforms that were there were absolutely incredible. So again, I thank you for your service. And regarding one of the comments about why there isn't a plate right now, and I'm sure you probably get it today, would be my guess. But over the years, while I've been on the Transportation Committee, we've always been told, essentially, that law enforcement would like to have just a plain plate. So in many cases, because I had one for cancer at 1 year, is the fact that that was the reason why we didn't pass a number of requests for the plates.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, Representative Quam, any closing comments?
No, I think my words would pale.
Absolutely. Thank you. Seeing none, no other questions, I will renew my motion for House File 678 as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the bill is on its way to Transportation Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Graskowski. Welcome to the Transportation Policy Committee, Representative Graskowski. I will move that your bill, House File 1539, be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance as well. Representative Graskowski, please present us your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Mr. Chair, you know, I was sitting down here. I thought this was the Finance Committee. I knew I needed to be here, but I was looking around, and I don't have a packet.
You look pretty comfortable. I wasn't going to say anything, but you're welcome. You were on the committee last year, so...
The same people, mostly. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill, and I'll have Ms. Geis and others talk about it, but it allows the ability for deputy registrars to put together and offer duplicate certificates of title.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. For the record, just introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm members of the committee. My name is Cindy Geis. I am the County Auditor Treasurer for Scott County. However, today I'm here representing an organization called MACO, the Minnesota Association of County Officers. No, we don't paint cars and do all that kind of happy stuff. But we represent all County Auditor Treasurers, Recorders, and Finance Officers. That's who we represent. In my last committee hearing, I said that we represent all 87 counties, and I think that there was a misnomer by some of the commissioners sitting in the audience that I was there representing their wishes as well. When we talk at Scott County, this bill originally, or the thought originally, reared its head at Scott County as we talk about efficiencies and doing things better in our county government. How can we streamline efficiencies? How can we make sure that the customer that comes to our county gets served quicker, faster, and accurately? So when we look at different types of proposals, we look at it from our own perspective, but when it affects a broader audience, such as the Deputy Registrar Association, we have to be cognizant of that, and we have to float that up that food chain as well. When we decided that the county, that this would really be a great opportunity for people who come to the county, those deputy registrars take all of that information that they are given by the person who has the identity of the person listed on the certificate of title saying, you know what, I lost my certificate. I want to get new insurance, and they need a copy of my certificate of title. Or I want to just sell my car, like tomorrow or tonight, and I can't find my certificate of title. They come to the county offices, the local registrar's office, and they provide all the information. The county registrar enters all of this information into the state system, keeps their application in most cases on file at the county offices, and then says, and by the way, we can't give you a duplicate title today. But you'll get one within a certain period of time. It'll come from the state. The customers at the counter are like, why can't you just print me one? I can come here and I can get a birth certificate. That document, if that got in the wrong hands, truly, what can someone do if they got someone else's birth certificate? and what kind of harm can they cause? So why can't I just get a copy of my duplicate title? And it's just like, we just can't. So as we floated this up through our organization, we said we should put this in our platform because this is a good platform item for MACO that we could, at some given point, try to move ahead. Earlier this year, as the session was just beginning, as is my normal course, I go to a bunch of different legislators and I talk to them about our platform items and the things that we know at some given point, whether it be this year or some future year, that we're going to move forward. And meeting with Representative Drazkowski, who, of course, I'm very thankful that he saw this and saw that this was a good thing and really provides a lot of efficiencies and actually provides the best value to our customers that we're trying to serve, said, you should try to move that forward. And so here we are today saying, can we do what is necessary to allow us to make sure that that customer who comes in gets the title that they need at the time that they need it? Since we have all the applications and we have printers, we just don't have the paper. If we can secure paper in the form of birth certificates and other types of things, we secure the place, we secure the tabs, I don't think that there's going to be any reason why we can't secure this paper as well. So with that, I will stand for questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your consideration and members.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Just a quick question. In the bill here, it says that the duplicate of certificate of title will be granted if satisfied that the applicant is entitled to the duplicate certificate. What would constitute justification or satisfaction that they are entitled to it? What do you have to provide?
Ms. Geis?
Geis.
Ms. Geis.
Mr. Chair, members, the owner of this duplicate title is the only one that can actually get it. So they have to make sure that when they fill out all of their personal information on the application and provide the identity that they are who they say they are, it's only in those cases that all of the proper documentation has been received by that Deputy Registrar's Office.
Follow-up, Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you. I think it also, according to the legislation, it's also, or legal representative of the owner can also provide, get the certificate as well. But that's just a clarification. Thank you.
Ms. Geis, we had a bill, or I have a bill, that has trying to get duplicates, speed up the process duplicating for manufactured homes, and it's an affidavits process. Are you familiar with that bill at all? That's got to do a little bit with real estate titling and real title law.
Mr. Chair, members, I truly don't. I am not aware of that provision. However, since titles of manufactured homes are also provided by the state, there are, I should clarify, there out of the 760 or so applications that we received just last year in Scott County, we're not a huge county, but we would have been able to process 92% of those at the time that that person was in our office. But there are times where we can't. That those applications are not the application, but that data has to be sent to the state for processing. I am not aware of the manufactured home provision, so I'm not entirely certain whether that would fall into the realm of this or if it would be one that only the state could issue.
It's different, but there's affidavit provisions in there. That 706 number, is that applications for duplicates or just title applications?
Mr. Chair, that is application for duplicate titles.
Okay, thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the author, or maybe the testifier, Ms. Tice. I see that there's a cost to this annually projection of $83,000 to do duplicates. I would presume that they based upon the previous years, but what is the reason for such a high cost to just make a copy of a duplicate? Obviously, I don't understand the process.
Ms. Geis.
Mr. Chair, members, we did receive some of the implications that there would be some costs, and I'll go over a little bit about what our thoughts are on whether or not those costs are true costs or possibly not. So there were some conversations about it's going to cost the state so much because we have to get this paper and send it to the deputy registrar's office. Well, they already have to have the paper because they print them themselves. So there is no true cost if they are already buying it anyway. So we it, then there was also a conversation about, well, then we'd have to ship it to them. And that would be, yes, you probably do have to ship it to us. Could you ship it with your tabs and your plates? You're already shipping those. There's also nothing in here that says, by the way, we don't have to actually print them in-house. We don't have to buy maybe that much ink. We don't have to buy the postage, and we don't have to buy the envelopes. I don't see the cost savings on the things that they don't have to do because that person's at our counter at that time. So, yes, there is potentially a cost for shipping, potentially not. I am not entirely certain that that's a true cost. There's also a big number on we have to reprogram our MNLAR system to be able to print these titles locally. The MNLAR system is not currently implemented in the counties yet. This is a project that's been going on for a period of 6 years. It is still in the state's hands, not yet implemented. Whether or not that is a true cost, I'm not a programmer. I claim to be a lot of things, and some of them are a little foolish, but I'm definitely not a programmer, so I don't know the technical change that would need to go along with a program that currently isn't even programmed entirely. It is in some fashion, though, so I would imagine there would be some manipulation as to that program and what it would need to, the changes that would need to be made. Other than that, they talk about a cost for an additional person to come out and audit the counties. We already have a liaison from the state that comes out and audit the counties. And tongue-in-cheek here, but if they're already auditing everything that we have, if we have another whole person that needs to come out and just audit that additional task, I think there could be some efficiencies gained through that process itself. But since there's already an audit, I just don't see that. An additional furniture and equipment, again, we already have that audit taking place. I don't see that there being a big expense. So that's a little bit of comment on what are these costs and are they true, are they truly realized, or are they assumed?
Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds like a good amendment for Representative Drazowski that no new furniture or no FTEs allowed. So, Representative Drazowski, so we just sold a car recently, and if I lost the certificate, which I didn't, my wife is in charge, she never loses anything, but had that been the case, I could have gone down with this bill. I could go down to my deputy registrar in downtown Delano City Hall, and they could print out a copy right there and then, since I have a buyer at that point. Is that how this bill will proceed? Is that the
Representative Drazkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McDonald, that's exactly how it would proceed. And, when we have government operating, we need to find out and continue to pursue avenues to get government to do the best job of serving the people, and that's what this one aims to do.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Government efficiency. I should only hope it comes from you, Representative Drazowski. Thank you.
Any other member questions? I just had one about getting the duplicate title on the spot. How do you factor in the liens against the vehicle?
Mr. Chair, members, the liens against the vehicle has to come with a card, and that you have to have that lien release in order for us to know that there isn't one existing in there at that time. If there is a lien, I guess I am not entirely certain what would happen, whether we could issue that on the spot or not. So I guess I don't really want to comment on whether or not they could even transfer the certificate of title with a lien on it. They may have to pay that off.
Okay. Is there anybody else that wishes to comment, testify on the bill? Seeing one. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and offer your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Thomas Henderson. I'm with the Department of Public Safety, Driver and Vehicle Services Division. And my testimony today is in opposition to House File 1539. In Minnesota, the DVS Central Office issues motor vehicle titles only when satisfied with the genuineness and regularity of the application. And the applicant of the owner of the vehicle is, in fact, the owner. A duplicate title is processed in exactly the same manner as an original title. Duplicate titles replace the original title and are legal proof of ownership. The only difference between an original and a duplicate title is a duplicate title is marked duplicate. But duplicate titles are not a photograph or a photocopy or an image of the title. Duplicate titles contain all the information and all the brands of the original title. All titles, regardless of the type or brand, are printed on inventory control paper in a secured setting. The Minnesota Motor Vehicle Title Stock has security features that are incorporated into the document to prevent fraud. Access to the title stock is controlled in a restricted with restricted access. DVS accounts for every title document that is used, damaged, or destroyed. This bill would allow the Deputy Register offices to print duplicate titles in their offices, which causes a concern for the security of the documents and the integrity of the Minnesota titling process. Blank title stock is a high value on the open market. In other states, they've had stolen title documents that have been used to create fraudulent titles, and they can be used for title washing schemes. Minnesota has not had a case where our title stock has gone missing and used fraudulently. Because of these concerns, DVS takes stringent steps in handling the papers. Our blank title stock is delivered in a locked truck. Inventory is managed and tracked through a sign-in, sign-out process. All inventory stock is stored behind closed doors and secured with a password and passkey. Each day, two people are responsible for picking up and dropping off the title paper in our storage room. When the titles are printed, the print room is locked to limit access and staff distraction. We essentially go from one secure room to another to do these titles. The title stock has a pre-printed control number, and it's reconciled daily. We account for any damaged, defective document, or needed, in other words, every piece of paper. If this bill is enacted, every deputy office will be responsible for the purchase of a high-quality printer. In DVS, we use a specialty printer provided by 3M, our vendor partner on this. Security measures will have to be in place to prevent theft. Internal controls and accountability for the blank title inventory, all in order to maintain the same level of security and integrity of the Minnesota title process that DVS follows. Maintaining the integrity of the security of the titling process protects all Minnesota motor vehicle owners and buyers. And we believe that the integrity and security of the titling process is equally important a customer service imperative as providing titles on the spot. Thank you, and I'll be ready to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Representative Bornstein has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Henderson, could you explain, I've never heard this term, title washing scheme. I think you put it that way. What is that exactly?
Title washing is where a branded vehicle, normally from another state, a title is applied for in a different state, removing the brand. So a vehicle that has been damaged and is salvaged in another state, a fraudulent operator will try to get a clean title from another state, washing the title from the brand. Generally, we will get involved when the Minnesota buyer has bought the vehicle thinking it's the clean title, but when we check with NVIDIA's, the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System, we see that it's been branded as a salvage vehicle or a flooded vehicle in another state. We now have to deliver that information to the Minnesota buyer.
Representative Hornstein.
So thank you. And so could you outline then, so how exactly would this make it easier, this bill make it easier for a title washing scheme?
The American Motor Vehicle Administrators Association best practice is that every duplicate title, a NVIDIA's check be made before issuing that title to ensure that that title has not been issued in another state. That's a process that we do religiously at our central office to check NVIDIA's and make sure that we carry forward all the brands that are the previous state has applied.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And and to the testifier, to the department, over the last few years especially, we've been hearing ongoing concerns about the time lag in regards to titles and duplicates, et cetera. And, you know, one of the frustrations that people have is trying to get a duplicate when you're trying to sell your vehicle or whatever, and it takes 2, maybe 3 months, as long as I've heard. And this is one of the ways in which we're trying to solve that issue. Do you have any other suggestions, ideas on how we can improve that to be kind of more realistic to what would be really would be necessary for us to have duplicate licenses or, excuse me, titles available?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Mr. Henderson, go ahead.
We do have a process for doing an expedited title for those people who are selling their vehicles, for example, right away. Our title turnaround time or our backlog has been high this year, and there's a reason for that. But we've made some process improvements, and that has come down significantly. We've moved our highest title turnaround time in 2016 was 90 days, and now it's down to 27 days, and it's dropping still. So we have made improvements in that, and we're continuing to make improvements. Our staffing level is normally for a 30-day backlog level, and so we're striving very diligently to get down to that level of service level obligation.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you for that, and I do appreciate the approving of that backlog because it's important for us. But are there any other options or compromises that you could see in which we could help expedite that more or allow the Department of Registers in order to be able to accommodate the same thing? Certainly with the new MNLARS system, that could be just as robust as we choose to make it. In allowing that information to be generated as well. I understand the security of the paper, and just as our checks that we now generate for most businesses have protections as well. Do you have any other compromises or options in which we could use?
Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, our MNLARS system will dramatically increase our title turnaround times to the favor of the people of Minnesota. Beyond that, I'm sorry, I don't have any other recommendations.
Ms. Geis?
Mr. Chair, members, I just want to comment on a couple different things that the testifier had said here, and as I appreciate the concerns over the concern over the paper. I do want to, again, talk a little bit about our processes that we have with birth certificate paper. It is just as important, and that paper has to be just as secure as anything else. It is all numbered. Every birth certificate piece of paper that has been maybe printed or printed in error or has been damaged, that's all accounted for, every single piece of paper. Our customer service counters has vaults. This vault is only accessible by people that have the proper security measures. So we're talking about all the cash and all the checks and everything else that goes into the vault. This is where we actually store our paper as well. The testifier had spoke to the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System, and some of our registrars already have that because people come into our office and request for the expedited title. So we are already able to check the exact same system that DVS checks as well to ensure that all of that information that they're checking is accurate and that the person coming to our counter can provide the identity and the information needed for that system. So the application is already in not all the deputy registrar's office, but every deputy registrar could make application to the state to have access to that application in order to be able to process expedited requests.
Well, thank you for the testimony. Members, any last questions? Sounds like a good discussion. Maybe some things can continue to be ironed out here. Representative Jaskowski, any final comments?
No, thank you for the discussion and considering the bill, Mr. Chair, members.
Good, very good. I did ask if there was anybody else in the audience. I didn't see anybody else wishing to testify. Representative Jaskowski, I will renew my motion that House File 1539 be referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you. Chair Rumbeck, did you want to give some direction to the committee members on schedule for the next couple days? I'm not very familiar. Did you?
I'm not privy. I have.
This is our last meeting?
Yep, I think we don't, unless there's some unusual circumstance. We do not have any further meetings, so.
Okay, well, on behalf of Chair Rumbeck, we've enjoyed the Transportation Policy Committee meetings, and this is our last meeting. Thank you all for the good work, and the meeting is adjourned.